The Coram Deo Church Community is a missional church rooted in historic biblical Christianity and committed to engaging an ever-changing culture. We hope the message you're about to hear spurs you towards spiritual formation and mission and helps you delight in Christ alone. Thanks for listening.
I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about myself to get things started. We don't really know each other. Well, I know Christian, his wife, a little bit, and I know Paul and Michelle, but the rest of you are strangers. So I thought I'd just introduce myself, tell you a little bit about where I come from, what I do now. I'm from Nebraska. I grew up on a farm just north of Lincoln, about 5 or 6 miles. So I was 18, then I came to Omaha, went to school at Grace University, for better or for worse, and graduated from there. And most of them mean to say good things about them. And then left for a while, came back. I grew up in the church, so I guess I was, on my way to Christianity most of my life, whatever that meant. I could resonate a little bit with the story of Cody was sharing here. Just kind of later in life recognizing some of the things that maybe needed to change and adopting some of those disciplines in my life that would foster my own faith and beliefs. Anyway, to make a very long and increasingly boring story short, I ended up coming back to Omaha because my family was here, and I started working for the Sarpy County Sheriff's Department of all places. And I worked every other weekend, and on the off weekend, I was going to Christ Community Church. I don't know why. I'd never really gone there before, but it seemed like a place to go. So I went there and eventually decided that I wasn't really connected in any way, and mostly it was because of my job. So I decided I either need to go to church or not go to church. Let's just make a decision. So I decided to go to church, quit my job, and quit the church, and went to another church. And this is the real point of my story. The church I started going to, the one that used to meet here, was called Mosaic Community. And the church was a little different. I was looking for something different, I guess, dissatisfied or selfish or something. I don't know. But I stumbled across this church, and it was very different because it was made up of people like myself, but not most of the people were not like myself. Most of them were people that I didn't usually encounter. And they were what I would call very low income, kind of marginalized of society. They're forgotten people. Some of them were actually homeless. They were men and women. They didn't have what I would call good social skills. It was kind of hard for me to talk to them, and so I didn't. And I would go to this church, and I would sit in the back. And my problem really wasn't with them. My problem was with my own selfishness and what I thought the church wasn't doing and should do and all those things. So I'd sit in the back with my bad attitude, and I would just kind of survey things. But I knew I should be in church, so I went, and that appeased my conscience for a while. But eventually I started to recognize some of these people that I was sitting next to in church, the people who I wouldn't necessarily associate with, I started to see them throughout the week on the streets. And this was a new experience for me because usually I didn't encounter people from church unless I intentionally got together with them. I started seeing them on the streets, and I recognized that the reason I was seeing them on the streets is because that's where they live. And they didn't have any place else to go. And so eventually I broke down some barriers and got outside of myself, and I started talking to some of them at church. And then later, during the week, I'd see them on the streets, and I'd talk to them there. And through this whole experience, I started to understand that there is a whole part of Christianity, a part of church, a part of being a Christ follower that I had never even thought about or explored before. And it had to do with the poor. It had to do with issues of poverty. And it was fascinating to me, and it was new and exciting, and so I was really excited about it. And I didn't really know what I was getting into. And to make this long story shorter, too, that church eventually closed its doors, but before it did, it started an organization called Mosaic Community Development, and that's where I work today, or actually volunteer. And the goal of Mosaic Community Development was to try to be a safe place to encounter the poor and to meet their needs and to be amongst them and to really practice some of the disciplines of welcoming the poor into the kingdom of God. And so that's a little bit about me, kind of how I came to the place where I'm at today. I'm not an expert on poverty, not even close. I have selfish hearts still. And I'm not good at doing without things, and I like having lots of money, and I like nice things. But the Lord has taught me a lot, and He's changed my heart, I think, toward the poor. And so I just want to share with you some of that today. I'll tell you a couple of stories from my own life. But most importantly, I would like for us to look at a couple of things in the Scriptures and examine perhaps what God's heart for the poor is, and maybe how ours should be changed toward that a little bit. So that's hopefully where we'll go this morning. At the end, I'm hoping to talk 30 minutes. And then at the end, I would like for questions to be asked, if you have them. or comments. They don't have to be questions. Insights that maybe you've had with encountering the poor or issues of poverty or things you've learned about the poor from scriptures. I'd love to learn from you as well. So just be thinking about those as I'm talking here. And if you have something, go ahead and jot it down and there'll be time to answer those later. So fair enough? Okay? Okay. The first question I always asked, I guess I didn't ask. It was asked to me when I first started going to Mosaic. It was, what is poverty or who are the poor? And that was, I mean, I thought I knew, but then when I really started thinking about it, I was like, maybe I don't know what poverty really is. Maybe I don't really know who the poor are because I don't really know any poor. So how could I really know who they are? And then I started to realize that my definitions of poverty and the poor were pretty inaccurate. When I thought of poverty, I thought, well, people who just don't have all the things that I have. They might not have a lot of clothing or food, or they might not live in a nice place, or they might not drive a nice car, they might not have a car. But those, I realized, were all forms of physical poverty, which obviously is poverty. I'm not saying it isn't. We're not trying to minimize that. But then I started thinking, there are many other forms of poverty. Poverty is a multifaceted issue. And I've listed a few here today. This is not an exhaustive list, but here's just a few types of poverty. Let's see if any of these might resonate with you. There's obviously physical poverty. I've already mentioned that. Educational poverty. Mental poverty. Relational poverty. Spiritual poverty. I realized that my education, whatever I think about it, you can't really take it away from me. I have learned things here that give me skills and advantages in life that other people who don't have proper education will never have. So those who don't have it have an educational poverty. Mental stability. I am mostly of sound mind most of the time. I'm pretty reasonable and analytical, and I can think things through, and I don't go off the deep end if something goes wrong. That's a wealth that I have. Some people don't really enjoy that for various reasons, so they have a mental poverty. Relational poverty. This is a huge one that perhaps encompasses all of the rest of them, along with spiritual poverty. I have a lot of relationships. Believe it or not, people like me, and they want to be my friend, and I want to be their friend. And so I have friends, and I have family, and it's really hard to completely take that away from me. Like, no matter what I do, my mom still really likes me, and I just can't shake that, no matter how hard I used to try. My dad, he likes me. My brother. The friends that I have relational wealth. And when things go bad in life, when I have a rough day, when I'm in need of a little extra cash sometime in my life, when I need to get a new job, the best way to get a new job I found is to know someone who knows someone who knows the person who's hiring for that job, right? Like, I have relational wealth. I'm connected. I'm networked. Those are things that are really hard to take away from me. But some people don't have that. Some people don't have friends. And it's hard for us to kind of understand what that would feel like and what it would be like. But it's true. Some people don't enjoy those things. Some people don't have family. And if they do have family, they're not people that are helping them out of poverty at all. Maybe they're contributing to their poverty. And if they have friends, they're not people who help them, but rather they take advantage of them. Those are, if you think about it, that really becomes true wealth, doesn't it? Because all of the physical things that we've mentioned before, food, shelter, clothing, money, cars, houses, those kind of come from educational wealth, mental wealth, relational wealth, family wealth, things that are passed on to us, right? Physical things, physical poverty or wealth become symptoms, I think, of something greater. And of course, all of these, I believe, fall under the umbrella of spiritual wealth or poverty. How is it we live our lives? Do we live our lives according to the principles and the ways of God that contribute toward wealth in all the areas we've mentioned, including physical wealth, I think? So anyway, I could talk all morning about that, but I just want to get us, this is a kind of an educational morning. I want to get the juices flowing, help us think about poverty is a multifaceted issue, all right? We are not just talking about clothing, food, and shelter. But if you think about most, this is kind of sad, if you think about most of the services available in Omaha, what are they for usually? When you think of the poor, you're like, oh, well, they need some food. They should go over there where they can get some food. Or they just need an extra coat. Well, I can donate some extra coats, you know. And then we kind of wash our hands. I do this. So when I say you or we, I really do mean me. And we wash our hands of the issue and we think, wow, we've done our part. Congratulations. I'm a pretty good guy. But I don't think we've really addressed issues of poverty if we're just talking about the physical. So that's my point there. But enough of me. Let's hear what the Lord has to say. We've talked a little about what is poverty, but who are the poor now? And more importantly, if we're to answer the question, who are the poor, then we need to say, well, what kind of poor are we talking about? the physical poor, the mental poor, the spiritually poor, the relationally poor. There may be some poor among us here today. Maybe some of us are relationally impoverished. Maybe some of us are spiritually impoverished. Anyway, the Lord has a heart for the poor, and I think all types of poverty. And if you have a Bible, I'm going to jump around to some verses here. It'd be great if you could read them with me. The first one is in Jeremiah chapter 22. I've got about two or three here that I want to show us, give us, I guess, just a glimpse of what God's heart for the poor are. And again, let's not just think of the physical poor, but all issues of poverty. What is God's heart for the poor? Jeremiah 22. It's somewhere roughly in the middle, a little bit more to the right than the left. Jeremiah 22. We'll read verse 16. It says, he's talking about, God is describing a righteous king of Israel at this point. So this is a description of that righteous king. He says, he defended the cause of the poor and needy, and so all went well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? Well, that's fascinating, isn't it? When we ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a Christ follower? What does it mean to know God? What kind of things come to our mind? Well, you would want to live a good life, I suppose, and you'd want to be familiar with the scriptures and be someone who's involved in prayer and worship. Well, here it seems the Lord is pretty clear that he is saying, what it means to know me is to defend the cause of the poor and the needy so that all will go well with you. It's interesting, isn't it? How is defending the causes of the poor and needy what it means to know God? How could that possibly relate? Let's just leave it there for a second. Let's turn to another one. Isaiah 28. Let's move back to the left a little bit. Isaiah 28, verse 17. Continuing to look at what God says about poverty or the poor. I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plumb line. Hail will sweep away your refuge and lie, refuge. The lie, the water will overflow your hiding place. The point of this verse, as Christian has so aptly pointed out, and what I'm trying to say from Jeremiah as well, the Lord has a heart for the poor. There's something about the God when he looks down at what he's created. He sees the poor and the needy, and his desire goes toward them. He is concerned with them. He has a compassion for them. His heart bleeds for those types of people. And so then as Christ, what I'm trying to get us to see here is as Christ followers, as people who are supposed to have the heart of Christ being transformed within us, how should our heart be like that? What are ways in which our hearts should be bent toward the poor? Are we concerned with justice for the poor? For the measuring line of righteousness, that they shouldn't be oppressed or taken advantage of or overlooked. They should be provided for instead. Are those the concerns of our heart? Not only because it's the right thing to do, but because it demonstrates that we know a God who cares about those things. You see what I'm saying? One more. I think this will help us perhaps see a little more clearly. Ezekiel 16:49. We're hitting all the common books today. It's going to be back to the right. Ezekiel 16:49. There's going to be some pretty strong language here. And the reason I'm using this is because I want you again to see these things are very important to the Lord. These are significant issues. These are not just side projects that we as a church kind of pay attention to once in a while. But rather, these are the things that beat within the heart of God. These are core values of God. All right? Ezekiel 16. Verse 49, I got the right one here. He's talking about Israel, and he's comparing them to Sodom. And obviously Sodom and sister city Gomorrah were not people that you wanted to be compared to. He said, now this was the sign of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and needy. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. Not only is God saying, look, my heart is for the poor and the needy, but for those whose heart is not for the poor and the needy, for those who willingly turn their back and even take advantage of those relationships and those situations, you're like Sodom. That's the kind of sin we're talking about here. That's the grouping that you're being placed in. All right? Now, when I first read these things, I remember thinking to myself, I don't think that's true. I don't feel like a Sodomite. I feel pretty good about myself. How can, you know, I don't really care about the poor. I don't really do anything for them, but I don't dislike them. I would do something, perhaps, if I knew how. But it was just a good reminder for me to recognize, not even a reminder, a good lesson for me to recognize that my inactivity, oftentimes, is just as bad as maybe willingly oppressing them. Because if I really claim to have the heart of God within me, if I really claim to be having a transformed life, then one of the ways that that's going to be demonstrated is, how do I treat the poor and the needy? How do I think about issues of poverty? This next one is the one that shocked me the most. Turn to Matthew. I remember when I read this, I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding me. I had never seen, I've probably read this verse hundreds of times. Matthew chapter 5. And I had never seen this before. I'm talking about Jesus now. No, probably before too, but now officially. Matthew 11, 2 through 5. This still gets me when I read it. Matthew 11, starting in verse 2. You've got John the Baptist, he's in prison, and he sends the people over to Jesus. And he's just a little concerned. He's like, I want to know that you're who you say you are. Give me some proof. So when John heard in prison that what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, are you the one who was to come, or should we be expecting someone else? Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cured. The deaf hear. The dead are raised. And the good news is preached to the poor. When I used to read that, I was like, well, of course it's Jesus. Blind people are seeing, right? Lame people are getting up and walking. Lepers are being healed. The deaf are hearing. Dead people are coming back to life. Of course it's Jesus. But I think Jesus is equating with all of those things. He's saying, you want to know that I'm God? You want to know that I am who I say I am? Yeah, I have power over all those things. Oh, and the good news goes to the poor. Fascinating, isn't it? But if we think about what we read from the Old Testament, how God describes his heart toward the poor, wouldn't it make sense that when incarnate God is identifying himself as God, that he would also identify himself as having a heart for the poor, that the good news would be going to them? And he would place such a high priority on it. I wonder if John was reading this list and thinking to himself, okay, yeah, blind, lame, okay, deaf. Good news to the poor. Now I know it's you. Maybe. I like to think so. But it's not how we think, is it? This is not our mindset. Culturally, we have to work so hard to get outside of these things. When we think of Christianity and what it means to be a Christ follower, we forget the poor. That sometimes never enter our mind. But it's becoming quite clear that God's heart is for them. That's sometimes one way we could define a healthy Christian life. Is your heart for the poor? Like God's heart is for the poor. So how do we know? I have one more verse. How do we know if our heart is for the poor? James 2:15. As you're turning there, so often in life, the way we know the condition of our hearts is we look at the condition of our lives. What do our lives say about things? What are we doing? Where do we spend our time? What do we think about? Where do we spend our money? Who are we hanging out with? Who are our relationships with? Those things quickly, I think, expose the conditions of our hearts and how we really feel about something. At least I know they did for me. I convinced myself that, yeah, I care about the poor. But when I took an honest, hard look at my life, I recognized, no, I don't. I don't spend any time with them. Oh, I go to church with them. Yeah, but I don't talk to them. Well, now I know a couple of their names. But so what? I know other people's names, too. It doesn't mean I really care about them. How do I develop a heart for the poor? Let's look at James real quick. James chapter 2, what is it here? Look at verse 15. Let me find it here. Almost to the back. Sorry. James is talking about issues of poverty. And my friends, if you do a word search on poverty or the poor in Scripture, you'll find out that this is a huge topic throughout. not just the Old Testament, but the New as well. There's a lot of talk about the poor and poverty and how to respond to these things. What did I say? Verse 15. I really on with the numbers today. All right. This is the whole faith in decency. We probably read this lots of times. Verse 15 says, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. One of you says to him, go, I wish you well. Keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs. What good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. I still do this. People come up to me on the street and they're like, man, can you spare some change? And I lie and I say no. And then they ask me if I have money. And sometimes I'll say yes. And they'll ask me, you know, well, why don't you give me some? And I'm like, I just don't want to. And sometimes I say, well, can you buy me a sandwich? And I'll say, no. And I'm like, why not? I'm going to take my money and go buy a sandwich. And I have plenty of it. Why couldn't I give some to you? And it's stories like that, circumstances like that, that make me realize the condition of my heart. I love my money. And I love my situation in life because it's very comfortable for me. I like people who promote my agendas. I like to be friends with people who are friends with people I want to be friends with. I like to be around people who make me feel good about myself. I like to be around people who tell me what a great guy I am. I like to spend my money on things that I like. And that is a sad, I say, I hope it's not coming across in a prideful way. I'm not proud of those things. Those are shameful things to admit, especially before the assembly of God's people. But it's true. I love those things. And I know I love them because of how I use them. Do I love the poor? I don't know. I don't know because I don't know if I'm really meeting any of their needs, whether it's physical or relational or educational or spiritual. If I was making efforts to meet some of those needs, then I think I could say, yeah, I think part of my heart is for the poor. I offer that to us as kind of a barometer. I don't mean to come in here and be a huge guilt trip. That's not really helpful. But I do think we need to take an honest look at ourselves and our hearts and our lives and say, what is the thermostat of our heart towards the poor? Well, what do we do? Do we do anything at all to move towards them or not? And if we don't, I think we could say that our hearts are quite incomplete because that wouldn't be the heart of God if His heart were in us. There's so much that could be said. I wrestled so much with how to trim things down this morning. I could talk for weeks about this stuff and give you stories of bad examples from my own life. But one question I ended up coming to, I was like, all right. So all these things are true. Yeah, God's heart is for the poor. We can begrudgingly admit that. Yes, begrudgingly we also admit our lives need to change. All right, how do you do that? What's the steps one takes to serve the poor, to really love them, to encounter them, to be amongst them? Perhaps a better question would be, all right, if we were to give to the poor and the needy of Omaha, what would the Lord give them? If our heart is to be God's heart for the poor, all right, well, what is God's heart? What should we give them? What types of things should we be doing to love them? And I've listed kind of five categories here. And hopefully these will be helpful in just some practical things to think through. I think we need to show compassion and initiative. We need to offer our relationships, which means time. We need to offer them peace, comfort, willingness to maybe suffer with them or for them. Patience, forgiveness, and also their physical needs, like James says, food and drink. They need those things as well. Let me share a story with you as it relates to patience and forgiveness. About 3 years ago, I had a really nice bike. It was a Cannondale. And if any of you are bike riders, you know, that's a nice bike. And it was a gift to me, on top of all that, from my best friend for being in his wedding. This thing was worth over $2,000. And I loved that bike. Man, my heart was with that bike. I loved riding it. I loved looking at it. I loved knowing it was mine. So the Lord took it away. I had a friend, and we'll call him Jay. And Jay was kind of in and out of homelessness, and he went to Mosaic Church, and I was kind of friends with Jay. And we said he could live with us for a while because he didn't have a place to live. And I thought, wow, that's really great that we could do that. We're really loving the poor and the addict. And Ray was, oh, well, there's his real name, Ray. Ray was a... Should have said something other than Jay. It's too close. Ray was severely addicted to drugs as well. And one night, I got a call from my other roommate, and he's like, "Where's your bike?" I'm like, "Oh, it's in my room." He's like, "No, it's not." I'm like, "Yes, it is." He's like, "No, it's not." And I was like, "What happened?" And I went home, and sure enough, my bike was gone. And I was like, "Well, where could it go?" It wasn't outside. It was in our apartment, in my room. And I was like, "Did Ray take it?" And yes, Ray did take it. Ray took my $2,000 Cannondale down to the pawn shop. He sold it for $125. And he went out and he got some drugs. And that was really difficult. I'm not crying over the bike. At the time I did. But later I realized, Ray doesn't hate me. Ray doesn't dislike me. I think he actually does like me. I think he recognized we were trying to be kind to him. But such is the severity of Ray's poverty and addiction that he was willing to take something treasured and prized by the only people showing him compassion and kindness and steal from them. And this was a significant lesson for me because I realized, wow, I'm not just called to meet some physical needs and be compassionate and look like I'm doing some nice things for a guy who doesn't have a home and is addicted to drugs. But I'm really called to suffer with and demonstrate compassion toward these people. This is not just an issue of, a one-time service event or, a one-time overnight stay. What was my heart toward Ray now? Am I still excited for Ray to overcome drugs and get off the streets? Or am I interested in finding Ray so I can get my bike back? I wanted to get my bike back. I'll be honest with you. And I was very angry at Ray. And Ray still has drugs. He still lives on the streets. But through Ray, God changed my heart toward the poor. So now I cry for Ray, not for my bike. I never got my bike back. I'll never get it back because the story's worth a lot more than the bike, as is Ray. And I hope that you're able to be a little moved by the story. One, because it was an expensive one. And two, the point is, again, not that, wow, look at his heart for Ray. No, God had changed my heart because he took away something that my heart was in the first place. And I loved. I loved the bike because I loved how it made me feel and I loved having nice stuff. And I was selfish about it. And God knew I needed to get rid of that. And so he took it from me. And he used a guy that he knew my heart needed to be with. And eventually he put my heart there. Years later, Ray confessed. It wasn't funny, but it was kind of funny. I knew he did it. And he kind of pretended that he didn't. And years later, he came into our office, and he's like, "Man, have you ever seen addicts, but they kind of just go, they're fidgety, and they kick around like this a lot." He was doing that, looking down. He's just mumbling real soft. And I think he'd been clean for a couple of days. Anyway, he's like, "Man, I'm really sorry I stole your bike, and I just feel bad about that." And I'm like, "That's all right, Ray. Thanks for telling me." And, I said, "You're always welcome here, Ray." And I said, just out of curiosity, like, how much did you get for it? And that's what I found out, the $125. And then for a moment, there was anger again, I'll be honest. But then it was mostly laughter. And I haven't seen Ray for a long time. I don't know what's going on. I know he's in and out of prison and drugs. And if you think of it, you can pray for Ray. But that's an example of compassion. How do we demonstrate compassion? To what length are we willing to go? Are you willing to sacrifice your bike? Do you love those things more than the poor? Are you willing to give of your time and relationships to these people? Or are you more interested in just coming and serving so I can feel like I'm doing something that's Christian? Another idea I had to get totally away from, I used to see the poor as my problem. As a Christian, the poor are a problem. I need to fix that. Or they're my project. Well, Ray clearly is over there, and he really needs to be closer to where I am. So I'm going to just move Ray over here. He'll be my project for a while. And I realized eventually that it was, at least from the way I was thinking about it, it was so demeaning. And how do we feel about it? People make us their project. Or if I'm suddenly your problem, you know? What kind of a name does that give to Christianity as well? It becomes it's very cold. It's not compassionate. It's not very relational, I don't think. Instead, I think what we're called to do is to discover who the poor are, to offer them compassion, to be willing to just be amongst them, to give them what they need. One of the Christian Works for Word of My Flesh, and they've taught me a lot about these things. I love their model. I don't want to misrepresent, but briefly speaking, their model for serving the poor, and they go to the poorest of the poor in the world. They'll go someplace, and they'll just be there a while, years even, and figure out, what can we do here? If it was me, I'd be like, all right, I got a plan from day one. You all need to move from here to here to here, and then once we're with that, we'll be over here, and then we'll close up shop. We'll be done in 5 years, right? Poverty eliminated. How arrogant to be able to think in those terms. But we do that, don't we? We got plans for the poor. Well, I'm going to transform them into this, or they'll be rich in 10 years with my plan to, you know, increase your wealth. Is that the point? Is the point to simply move them so they have more physical wealth? And what did that do for us? Now we're sitting here today talking about how we shouldn't have so much. Is that the point? Or is the point that perhaps in being willing to just suffer with the poor from time to time? I suffer with Ray in some ways. It really makes me sad. And when you're sad about something, it's amazing how more effective your prayers become, I think. Because you really want it. And in the face of the poverty that Ray had, when I really embraced that, I came to terms with my own poverty. I had some severe spiritual poverty. I still do. What was it? My heart was in the wrong place. And that was identified to me through encountering the poor and their poverty. You see, the poor are not just there so that we can go serve. We're served by the poor. The poor will always be with us, Jesus said. Why is that? I think it's because in some ways the poor are a gift, my friends. The poor are a gift to us from God because they remind us of our desperate need for Him. They remind us of our own poverty. They remind us of what our relationship with Him should look like, and then it shows us how we should embody that to others. The poor are a kind gift, and so I'm not sure the Lord is going to take them away from us. And so how can we suffer with them in the midst of it, as Christ has suffered on our behalf? How can we show compassion to them as compassion has been shown to us? How can we demonstrate peace and a willingness to be with them as Christ gives peace to us and a willingness to be with us? How do we provide physical needs for them as Christ provides physical needs for us? Things are not our own. I like to think they are, but they're not. How do we share those? Has it ever occurred to us that maybe we're given so much because there are others with so little? We think, Lord, why don't you give them something? Not my stuff. I need to hoard this a little longer. Maybe there's plenty for everyone, but we just don't give it because our hearts are impoverished. Do we demonstrate patience and forgiveness the way the Lord has been patient with us and forgiven us? Challenging things to think about. One more story here. I don't know if I should share it or not. Yeah. Let me ask a few final thoughts. I have no idea how long I've been talking. Has it been 30 minutes? 36 minutes. The Lord has truly blessed you today. Good thing we're not sharing that story, huh? Okay. These are my last points, and then I'd love to hear your questions and comments if you have any. What I'm trying to say today is we have to change our hearts to match the heart of God toward the poor. You want to know what you should do? That's what you should, if you're a doer, you're like, I need a plan. Give me something. Change your heart. Beg for God to change your heart toward the poor, the way his heart is toward the poor. If you don't know what his heart is, read about it. I have lots of verses I can share with you about those things. And finally, what do you believe the gospel is really capable of? How are our lives to be missional toward the poor? That's a trendy word today. We like to use it, missional. It's a good one. But how are our lives missional toward the poor? Do we believe the gospel really encompasses them as well? Or not? What do our lives say? And finally, we must not make the poor our problem or our project. We are not called to make the poor rich, but remember them and be amongst them as servants. We do example Christ to them.
We hope you've enjoyed this message. For more information about Coram Deo, visit our website at cdomaha.com.